Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today I have a very special guest named Eileen Forrestal. And Eileen, as a very, very young girl, had a medical trauma. And from that moment onward, she did not want to speak. And she had a lot of trouble speaking. Now, in yoga and yoga therapy, we might say this is a fifth chakra issue, the throat, the neck, the ability to speak, and especially because her medical trauma was dealing with the throat. So I find that really interesting. And it took her decades to have the courage to move through this medical trauma and the resultant wanting to be silent because of her stuttering or stammering, as she says. And I just think that is so interesting that something that happens to us when we're so young and we have no idea how that's going to impact the trajectory of our lives. So I hope as you listen to Eileen's story, you'll know that her story is your story and that something happened to you when you were 3 years old, that is still currently impacting you, causing you to avoid things, causing you to make decisions, causing you to be the person you are. And just like Eileen, you can decide at any time. You can start today. It doesn't matter what age you are. You can start right here, right now, to face your fears and to do it anyway, and to move through that trauma and the resultant decisions you've made in your life and the way that you are. She makes it sound so easy, but I think until we really hit rock bottom and realize that what we've been doing just isn't working for us, I think it's at that time that we're probably finally ready to face our fears and move through it. And then the result is you begin to shine. So let's go meet Eileen. And this is a really sweet and interesting story that I think you'll really enjoy.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour, Season 7. Our goal with this podcast is to help you remember the goodness in life. Remember the goodness inside of you. Remember the goodness inside of everyone else. This world has been so challenging for many years now, and I think we need a reminder that it's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We can trust ourselves to make it through this challenging life. And this podcast is your reminder. Each and every week, we have a special guest who's going to come here and remind you it's going to be okay. We got this together.
Welcome, Eileen. I'm so happy to have you here today on the Yoga Therapy Hour.
Thank you for inviting me, Amy. I'm delighted to be here.
So we should tell our audience we've never met. We actually haven't even talked about this interview. This is going to be a very fresh conversation. So, Eileen, let's just start with where are you located?
I'm located here in the beautiful northwest of Ireland in a town called Sligo. I'm about 4 kilometers outside the town, and I call it splendid isolation, my little corner of heaven.
I can see that in the window behind you. It just looks so beautiful. So, are you an introvert?
No.
You're not.
I have
Okay.
moments of introversion, but probably generally not. No.
So, you have written a book called The Courage to Shine, and this is so relevant in my life right now, and so many of my friends and family, like, to allow ourselves to be authentically human and allow the creative forces within us to come out of us, like it's a really big deal. So, can you give us just a little overview of what it means to have the courage to shine?
Okay, well, just to let you know, I didn't always have it. For a long time, I did not have any courage to shine. And what had occurred for me, like shining, was actually speaking. Here I am on a podcast, on the video. It's like that was not going to happen. I grew up with a stammer and I couldn't really get any words out. kind of, when I was like in school, it was like pretty tough. You know, everybody else could, they could copy me and they could kind of laugh, but they could stop and I couldn't. And then like in secondary school, you know what it's like when there's girls in the class, you know. And anyway, I kind of decided when I was a teenager, I'm just not going to do it anymore. Like, I was so afraid of being embarrassed or being humiliated, like all of these things. So it just stopped me. So I went and I had a career, you know, because I couldn't deal with the telephone
Can we stop
job.
for a minute? So, when you say a stammer, is that what we in the United States might call a stutter?
Yes.
And when you say you couldn't stop, does that mean it just kept coming out and you couldn't stop yourself from stammering?
No, I couldn't understand how the others could like pretend they had one and then they could speak normally. And I just spoke this way all the time. And I'd look and see, how do other people do that? It's like, how come other people's words just come out and mine gets stuck? I just tried. And I mean, look, they did everything. We had speech therapy and I had like child psychologists and I had all those things when I was a child and nothing worked. So anyway, I just decided that's it. I'm not going to do it anymore. Silence, relative silence. Now, not complete silence, but anything that looked like it was going to be stressful, like anything like it was going to recreate the classroom experience, I was just not going to do it. And anything to do then with, you know, jobs when I was leaving school, they were saying, you know, obviously telephones were part of working. And I thought, no, I can't do that. And then my brother had been to college before me and he said, oh, college is easy. You know, they don't ask you anything. You just sit there and you do your exams. And I thought, okay, I'm smart. I said, I can do that. So I thought, what's the longest course in college? So that was medicine. So I thought, all right, so I'll do that. And then I had it at the end of 7 years, this damn stammer should be gone. Excuse me for swearing, but you know, that was my theory. And then there was all this kerfuffle, you know, my career guidance teacher, oh, she can't be a doctor. She won't be able to talk to patients and all that. And I said, oh, just give me 7 years. Just give me 7 years. So anyway,
And
7 years passed
what
and
were
another
you
seven
thinking would
and another
happen?
seven.
What were you thinking would happen in that 7-year period? Like you would relax a little
I would
bit?
relax. I would relax. Yeah, the stress would be off. I would relax.
Because
That
it
would be.
was related to stress, it sounds
It
like.
was related to complete anxiety. The thought of having to speak would suddenly have everything go, my heart rate, my tongue stuck to my mouth, all of this thing. And the only way I could relax was just like, I'm not going to do it.
And it was in personal interactions, like one-on-one.
Yeah, no stress, you know. So with friends or with my family, they understood. They had patience for me. They would wait. And I'd eventually get, you know, get it out. But I was quite sort of frustrated. I had a lot to say and I wasn't really able to say it. So I would spend a lot of time writing. I would write a lot. And I had my pets. I had like maybe a dog and a couple of kittens. Always had a supply of, you know, animals that I could relate to. And I just read a lot. And anyway, that was just it. So anyway, I ended up being an anaesthetist. Nice and quiet. Didn't have to speak very much. Anyway, that was kind of whatever. And then, you know, yeah.
Let's talk about that. In the US, would we call that an anesthesiologist? Okay. So this is ironic.
I
You
know.
are wanting to be silent and you are putting people under.
There's even more irony to it because the
Okay.
origin of my stammer was actually I had taken an accidental overdose of aspirin and I had a stomach washout. So it was after the stomach washout with this kind of coughing and retching and choking kind of that I did that just interfered with everything. So technically, so here I am like, you know, 20, 30 years later, and I'm literally putting, you know, tubes down people's throats so that they're silent. So yeah, the irony was not wasted.
So I just have to keep backing up. Are you saying that when you had your stomach washed and a tube down your throat, that's when the stuttering first started?
Yeah. I was around
Wow.
about three and it was like, you know, so when you're learning to kind of say it and I'd just be upset and kind of choking and coughing and all of that drama. And then it obviously just interfered with my speech. That
It
was the
sounds
whole
like.
story and the drama of it.
So a medical trauma seems to have triggered your stammering.
Well, yeah, it just seemed to have been that he's trying to speak at the same time as being upset and crying and words just not coming out easily. I probably was too upset. And anyway, I kind of write about it. I try and explain it as best I can in the book. So yeah, anyway, that was the kind of the origin of it.
Okay, so we've followed you through your childhood. You've gone to medical school. You're an anesthesiologist. You're putting people under. And then what? What's the next chapter?
Well, I suppose the next chapter is my career would be very checkered because I had a certain attitude that if you really wanted me to present a case or kind of speak in public, I wasn't going to do it. So I move around jobs very quickly. I would kind of, I would leave, I'd leave countries so as not to be found out. Because if I did anything at all, they would find out that I had this stammer, and I really didn't want anybody to find that out. So I suppose that was really kind of a strange kind of life. And I was nearly always hoping that somebody else would say what I wanted to say, or, at some point, like courage, whatever it was. So then my marriage broke up. My career was kind of really in the doldrums. I'm thinking, oh my God, like, what is going on here? This is not supposed to happen to me. I'm a good person. I do a good job. It's like, whatever, this thing. And then I was at a seminar and I was looking at, gosh, maybe this fear of speaking is actually curtailing a lot of my life, because it was like, well, if you're not speaking, you're not really anywhere. You're listening all the time, but you're not actually in the room. Anyway, I kind of thought, well, what's the worst that could happen? So I kind of gave it a go and it didn't sound too bad. So then I kind of just kept going, and here I am,
And how
trying
was that
again.
at first when you first decided that, look, I have to face this fear, give it a try? And I'm sure for a while it was probably pretty difficult, meaning it didn't come right out so beautifully at first. How was that?
The thing is, it probably did. Once the fear was gone, it was really with encouragement. It was like, go on, go for it, Eileen, and risk it, right? Just go for it. So once I remember actually walking up, it was in a kind of a room, and I'm kind of walking up to the microphone. And I thought I would die between my chair and the microphone. I really thought that was my, I said, really, the best thing to do is just die now. If I could faint at will, I would have done. But, dying would have been kind of, but I had kind of, I'll keep going. And I remember standing at the microphone, and I'm just looking at the people, and people are looking at me, and I'm looking at the people, and people are looking at me, and I think I better say something. I said hello, and then I said, oh, hello. And then I could actually look at the individual people, and none of them were like, they weren't like mean 13-year-olds. They were like regular people. And I just said, well, hello. And I could hear the hello, and I thought, sounds okay. So really, it was like, gosh, I was actually calm. And as I stood there, I got really calm. And then I just sort of said, oh, well, thank you, and sat down. The anxiety was gone, whatever it was. I mean, don't ask, whatever way my brain recombobulated itself in that instant. And so, yeah, I've never had that anxiety since.
Are you saying that the fear was actually worse than actually doing it? Like your anticipation of trying this thing was the
I think
worst, but once you got up
totally.
there and did it, it actually went pretty smoothly.
It's almost like it wasn't there, because the fear had stopped me from just not doing it. You could ask me till you were blue in the face, and I was not doing it. But this particular time, when I kind of said, okay, I will, like, I will. And then when I did, it was like, oh my God, I could have done this a lot earlier. I could have done this like 20 years ago.
I think for our listeners, this is so important because all of us have these fears. Just cultivating the willingness to move into that fear and say, you know what? The things I'm scared of, that's worse than just getting up there and being a failure. So I might as well just give it a try. So I just think so many of us have these things that we fear. And if we could just have the courage to walk up there and even do them badly if needed, it's mostly in the anticipation.
Yeah. And it's kind of realizing that the fears that you had then are not the same. The audience is not the same. Like, my fear was really around, it was like a, it kind of related to a school. A new teacher had come at school, and I didn't know this teacher, and the teacher didn't know me and didn't understand that you don't ask me any questions. And then when the teacher did ask me the question, like, literally just, what's your name? And my friend said, oh, her name is Eileen Forrestal. And he said, I didn't ask you, I asked her. He's looking at me. And I try and say my name. At that point, I'm like stunned. I can't even say my own name. I'm well able to say my own name. And I was well able to say my own name. But that triggered that whole experience. So I think once that kind of experience got teased out and said, look, that's the past, that's 13. I'm in my 40s at this stage. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Let me just give it a try as like a grown up and see how that goes.
But isn't that
So.
most of what's holding us back in life is that thing that happened at 8 or 9 or 13, and that we carry the scent, you carry the scent forward into your current time and have this false assumption that if it was hurtful then, it's going to be painful now. And you were able to kind of de-link that for yourself, I think.
Well, I think I was encouraged. That's why I say courage to shine. We have to be encouraged. It's the greatest gift. It was the gift of encouragement. And so many of us resist being encouraged. It's like they're making you do something. I said, no, actually, they're encouraging you.
Who's
So I
they?
think
Who
the
encouraged?
encouragement and be willing to be encouraged. I think that's it. So yeah, I kind of think we talk about cœur and, le cœur, the heart, in
Sacré-Cœur.
French. Yeah. If you really kind of find it in here, not in here. It's not in here. It's down here in this. So have the
And who
courage to come
encouraged
from your
you? When you
heart.
say they encouraged.
A friend encouraged me just to do this particular seminar. So I went and did the particular seminar. And then in the seminar, I got the encouragement from everybody else that was risking it. Like, I wasn't the only one. Like, there was other people kind of like, oh gosh, okay, so I'm not alone. There are ways to kind of, overcome these things. So I just kind of said, okay, well, I'm in the right place. What else am I going to do? Things weren't going well at the time, and they're going a lot better now.
I am so happy to announce that our Optimal State mobile app is now up and functioning well. Some of you were part of our beta program, and we appreciate your feedback so much. But now the Optimal State 2.0 mobile app is ready and it's working well. This app can help you track the different states of your nervous system, and it can give you feedback about how your nervous system is functioning from 2 to 6 a.m., 6 to 10 a.m., 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. You can see the patterns and what's happening inside of you based on the data. In addition, we give you interventions and ways you can bring yourself into a balance. Very soon, we're going to be adding live classes and recorded classes so that you can actually interact with us and turn a yoga nidra on in the middle of the night or take a class with us. That's coming soon. For now, we'd love you to try 3 weeks free and see if the Optimal State app can't make a difference for you. Just go to the App Store on iPhone or Android and type in Optimal State and it will pop up. You can download it for free. And we'd love to see that it's helping you and your loved ones that you recommend it to. And as we said, very soon we're going to have classes. So enjoy the first 3 weeks, our gift to you. Sometimes we have to get in those really painful positions and kind of hit rock bottom and realize what we're losing by not taking that risk, or we're willing to, I think. And I love this connection that you're making between encouragement and courage, that sometimes it might take someone outside of you kind of loaning their encouragement for you to then internalize it and get the courage to do the thing. So then I heard you say that it never happened again after that. Now that seems unbelievable that from a very young age to 40, you were one way, and then all of a sudden you were different. Tell me about that.
Well, I think what was different was the anxiety. And then it was the not willing to put myself in situations. So, like I said, I'm an anesthesiologist. So, you can put me in a very stressful environment in theater. I will handle everything in theater, any of the emergencies, that's not a problem. I worked as a locum for a long time. So, I did a lot of work in the theater. But what I was afraid to do was apply for a permanent position because I knew I would have to be at meetings and you'd have to have an opinion, a management meeting. I can't do that. So I wouldn't put myself in any of those situations just in case. So much of me was avoiding, like all the time. So even though I probably was, quite articulate in my own self, when there was no anxiety and I didn't have this whole panic of, I'm not doing it. So that whole world, it just shrunk. It was like just to make sure that I didn't put myself in any situations. I didn't really consider it as anxiety at the time, but it was probably the way to avoid like multiple panic attacks. And just to avoid anxiety, it was just to make this nice decision. The decision was actually, you can shoot me, you can jail me, but you cannot make me speak. And that just carried me. And I can do everything else but speak.
And then after that day that you got up and stood up in front of everyone and said hello, like it just went away, like it never
But
came
yeah,
back.
well, nobody was trying to make me speak. Nobody was trying to shoot me. Nobody was trying to jail me. It was like this was my self-expression and it was kind of my responsibility now. And if I wanted to say something, well, just go ahead and say it, Eileen. And if it comes out a bit whatever, let it. But the
So you're,
anxiety and the concern was gone.
because it was your choice to walk up there.
Pretty much. much. Yes, of course. Yeah, it was like, this is the time where I talk about in the thing, in the book, you know, this free will that we have. I say it's free won't. Like, I'm not going to do it. You can't make me. But when you have the will to do it, that starts everything. So it is the willingness to risk it. It's the willingness to give it a go, the willingness to be encouraged. And then you've no idea what happens.
So what happened after that? From that point
Probably
on, you could speak just like you are today.
everything. Probably everything. Well, I got a permanent job because I wasn't afraid to get him to be in meetings and have my opinion, have my voice done or out there. And I remember it was interesting because I was going to do a climb of Kilimanjaro for an organization called Child Aid. And my cousin had arranged for her school to do a sponsored silence for me. So they did like 48 hours of silence in this particular school. But she said, you had to come back and tell the young people in the school about the trip. It's like, okay, we'll see how this goes, right? So anyway, I went off to the trip, had a great trip up Kilimanjaro, and not great, but I survived. And then I had to kind of go back into the school, and I got like 40, 16 and 17 year olds. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I haven't been back in school since I was 13. And I said, you know what? And I told them all about the trip and what it was like to be on Kilimanjaro. And I had a ball. I said, and they listened. And I think, oh my God, this is actually quite fun.
They put together that you had had a problem with speaking, and yet they were giving 48 hours of silence to support you.
I don't know. I'm saying nothing. It was just an easy way to raise money, to raise some funds for me. So I think they raised, I don't know, 600 or 700 euro or something, which I thought was quite good.
All right. So we've talked about the courage part. Let's talk about the shine part, the courage to shine, because this isn't just like, now you can speak. The word shine to me is like allowing your true essence to come forward in the world. So, what does the word shine mean to you in this context?
Again, I relate that in the book as well, because a lot of my frustration and my anger and upset was directed at my very unfortunate mother. She kind of berated herself that she had left out the tablets, even though I found them. They were well hidden, but I found them. And then I blamed her. And it was like obvious my life was never going to be right because I could never get the words out. So, you know, as long as this stammer was in existence, I was doomed to some sort of, you know, I don't know, half life or whatever. So a lot of that anger was kind of, you know, directed at her. It wasn't like an obvious thing, but I was very much, if she said, you know, wear your hair this way, I'd say, well, I'll wear it this way. And if she said, that color looks nice, I said, well, I'll wear this color. So there was just a little bit of that contention. So when I kind of came into this relaxed state of mind and looked at my life, I thought, oh my God, I had the best mother ever. She literally saved my life when she sent me down to the doctor to relieve me of 40 junior aspirin. And then I had another episode when I had my tonsils out. They decided that if they took my tonsils out, that might help my stammer. And I felt I was kind of, you know, the words were nowhere stuck near where they were looking for the tonsils. I knew the tonsils were like somewhere down here and the words were stuck up here. I could see no relationship between the tonsils and the words. Anyway, they took out my tonsils. But my mother, you know, had said I was going on holiday. She didn't tell me I was having my tonsils out because my previous hospital episode had been so traumatic. And she had been a children's nurse. So she thought she'd save me the anxiety of thinking I was going into hospital. However, waking up the morning, you know, the following morning, having had your tonsils physically removed from your throat was not a happy state. So I was very, very, very angry with her. So I kind of, a lot of that. So really when I had to come afterwards and think, actually, mother, I'm really, really sorry. You were the best mother in the world and I've had a great life. And, you know, I've had everything and really great and you're marvelous and I love you to pieces. And thank you very much for everything.
I
And that
have.
just kind of released me from like so much of that kind of prison of, you know, it's all over here with me. I'm a mess and it's all your fault. It's like, you know what? I'm not a mess and it's nobody's fault. You did a great job. Thanks very much.
And was that standard practice that you would remove someone's tonsils because they had a stuttering issue?
I have no idea. I suppose they were looking for any reason because my stammer was my stammer and I had the choking and the whatever it was going on when I was five, six, seven. So anyway, it all got mixed up.
So when you realized that your mother was not so horrible after all, and that you didn't need to be so angry at her, did that release you? Because I think so many women can relate to that. Even after our mothers are gone, we still have like some grudge we're holding. Did that release you to kind of be more authentic and be more of yourself?
Totally, totally. I kind of realized I had shut her out when I was about six. I said, that's it. You know, I've had it with you. So you lock that piece away. It's like, that's not ever going to get hurt anymore. I'm going to keep this. And then you realize, actually, you're still here. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know, but there is that sense of it not being kind of there anymore and having all of this courage to, it's like to tell the truth and, you know, can I tell her I love her? And, you know, because I said, I hate you. You know, I hate you. You're horrible. You know, when I was
And
little.
you
And
decided that at 6 years old.
I know.
Oh my.
Ruthless, huh?
How old were you when you finally decided on that? I don't know if you'd call it forgiveness, but that realization that she was not the problem. How old were you?
43.
43. Wow. And did that come about spontaneously? Did that, like,
No,
how
it
did
kind of
that happen?
came around at the kind of same inquiry about the anxiety and the impact. It's really looking at your life and seeing how has it ended up this way, you know, and then tracing it back to like, gosh, you know, it's like, you know, you join the dots backwards. So I was kind of joining the dots. That's kind of why I wrote the book. It was like joining the dots backwards. It's like, oh, okay, let's tease it back and
And
then
did
bring
you
it.
have a therapist or anything help you to trace those dots back, or you just came up with this in your
Just the
own?
different conversations I'd be having, you know, people who maybe were doing similar explorations of how it is to be and kind of empowered in life.
Was it the writing of this book that helped you put all these dots together? I hear that a lot. I actually saw something beautiful on LinkedIn the other day. Someone had shared a chapter of a book they had written, and they said, "Thank you for reading this because it gives me an outlet to clarify my thoughts and really look at what it is that I believe." So I think what they were saying is that their writing was for them to have better self-understanding, and thank you for seeing me, which is a totally different take on writing than writing this book for you all. And I'm going to sell copies of my book. So, how was writing this book? How did that play in?
Well, it just came, somebody had said, oh, you have a good story, you should write a book. And I thought, really? So when I kind of started on that, I was thinking, well, how am I going to make my story be of value to a reader? Because, you know, my story is mine, you know, and I could like teasing it out, but in teasing it out so that it's value to the reader, so the reader will also get something. Because, like you said, everybody's got something. Everybody's got some fear. Everybody's got some block. Everybody's got some issue with the parent for something or a sibling. And it's like just to tease it back and see, well, where did a lot of this kind of start? And how did you kind of, you know, tease it out? So I kind of had to do it from the reader's perspective as well, not just my own. So it took quite a number of years to get the whole thing together. I think it did it quite well, but it's up to the reader to judge whether it's of benefit to the reader. But I think it was primarily when somebody said, well, why don't you write a book? And I thought, all right then.
And
Okay.
did it help you get clarity about all of this as you were writing?
Well, I think it did, because when you're joining the dots backwards, it seems more logical now, you know. So when you can join them backwards, then you can also kind of join them forwards. So instead of you're looking back to think how it all happened, you think maybe I could actually, you know, not quite engineer it, but like have it go the way I want it to go, as opposed to go the way it actually went, which is what I didn't want, but that's how it ended up anyway. So.
You did the reverse engineering to figure out what had happened to you. And then from this point forward, the trajectory could be different. Yeah. I have to ask you a question because it comes up a lot in the US political system. We have a president named Joe Biden who has had a lifelong stutter, and people have often mistaken that for not being intelligent, or even I think some people have mistaken it for maybe that he has some early cognitive decline, although he's in his 80s, I believe. But did you ever feel that way, that maybe you were being judged for your intelligence because you weren't speaking?
Not really, no. In a way, I kind of knew I was pretty smart. I didn't really care what people thought. Look, that was just the way it was. I read a lot. I was a pretty good student. I listened to everything. Anything the teacher was saying, I was listening. I mean, I'm listening. Like, I mean, my ears are wide open because I'm not saying anything. So I kind of had it in myself that I was quite smart. So it never occurred as that. But there was an interesting thing you say, because Richard Branson also had a stammer. And he was saying, so while my mother used to keep saying to me, oh, Eileen, speak properly, speak properly. And I said, I can't speak properly. If I could, I would. Will you leave me alone? But his mother said to him, if you have to say it, then you must say it. Like, you know, if it's important enough to say it, you must say it. So he just went through and spoke. And I'm sure Joe Biden did exactly the same thing, because you get the president of the United States, you don't get that by hiding behind and becoming an anesthesiologist. You know, you go out there by doing it anyway. And I think the other thing was that my parents would have thought, probably because of my personality, when I was like in full flight with, you know, my mother and at home, we were a small family, but I could certainly let loose there. And they would have thought that I probably would have followed my grandfather, who was in politics and journalism. And they would have thought that. He actually went in 1922, he went to America to speak on behalf of the peace treaty at the time, the Anglo-Irish Agreement, for, you know, so we could maybe avoid civil war here in the 20s at the beginning of the foundation of our state. And I actually went and did that, recreated that tour myself this year. In the Northeast. I know I didn't do the full, he did 13 states and 20 cities, I think, in 52 days. I didn't quite do that. I think I did maybe six. But anyway, it was kind of in his footsteps. But like, I can do it now, you know, so I could speak at the, you know, the Irish American Heritage Society and think, oh, I can share his story. And, you know, there's so much freedom now that I kind of have now. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I've gone off the point there, but it never occurred. It was just like, speak properly. It's like, I can't speak properly. Stop asking me. And if I can't speak properly, I'm not going to speak at all. There you go.
So you had this internal confidence. You knew you were smart, but you also had this anxiety. Do you know the seed? You said you didn't care what people thought. So what was the seed of the anxiety?
It never occurred to me that they would have thought that I was stupid.
Oh.
Right? But for me, I just couldn't get the words out the way everybody else did. So it was just that there was sniggering, or they were laughing, or it was literally the structural, physical thing of just getting the thing that you wanted to say. If I wanted to get a packet of crisps, I had to ask for an apple, because I could say apple and I couldn't say crisps. And if I wanted to get on the bus and I wanted to get off at Beaumont, I couldn't get off at Beaumont. I had to get off at Santry because I could say Santry. So my whole life was kind of determined by what I could actually say, the words that could get out, but it wasn't what I wanted. So it all got mixed up, but here it is. It's all fine now.
What's interesting to me about this is yours was so obvious to everyone you were coming into contact with, but I think we all have this. A lot of us are able to hide it. We're able to maneuver through it. Nobody would know. I mean, when you mentioned Richard Branson, I think he also has dyslexia, which is something I share with Richard Branson. But because it's kind of this hidden thing and I can compensate for it, I can kind of get along, but I have avoided writing my whole life because it's really hard for me, right? So I think we all have that thing that we're maneuvering through life and avoiding things and making choices. And in some ways, it occurs to me that you are almost lucky that your thing was so obvious, because I bet many of us go into our 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, not even realizing how much we've avoided and how much our thing has dictated our life choices.
Yeah, you could see a lot of that really in the medical profession. You know, I'm 32 years as a doctor, and you just saw how much of what I would say the dis-ease, you know, gets manifest as disease, because your coping strategies are just off the wall. You know, you're drinking too much, you're taking drugs, you're smoking, whatever it is, because you're trying to deal with this thing that you can't even see what it is that you're trying to deal with. And instead of looking at it, you just keep trying to hiding it more. And of course, the more you hide it, the more it appears. So yeah, all of that, I agree.
I can imagine how that, trying to cope with that, whether you're aware that you have this, whatever it is or not, I can see, especially in the medical profession, how coping with that could turn you in, you know, towards addictions to numb any uncomfortable feelings.
I mean, I would imagine, and I probably used to drink and smoke myself in those days.
The truth.
More than I should have done. Don't do it so much. It took a toll on my relationship, because it was almost like my husband was supposed to say what I wanted to say. He was supposed to be doing what I wanted to do, because I didn't. So it takes its toll. Yeah, I think you have to kind of look and see, where am I in all of this? And what's my role in all of this? Like, what's my role in my life? So even when it comes to authoring the book, you know, and you're the author of your own life. Yes, you can write what's taken so far, but now I can actually author it as I go on.
You know? I go back to the relationship piece just for a moment, because it's just occurring to me how many of us probably have a deficiency. And instead of working on that, we expect our partner to do it for us or make up for it or be the one. And not only do we expect that, but then we get mad at them when they can't be that or do that, when really it's, we should be working on that within ourselves. Like, did your partner know that you were trying to get them to speak for you?
It probably wasn't deliberate. I probably wasn't intentionally trying to do it, but I was probably so habitually, that's how I behaved. You know, it's almost like if you were in company, I wouldn't be speaking and he would. And I'd be thinking, I wouldn't be saying that. Be saying something different. You
While
know,
you're
like, why
sitting
did you
there
say
not
that?
able
Why did you
to
say that? You know, why did you say that? That wasn't, you know, like if I, so you're always kind of living this like double life. It's like what you would be saying in your head, you know, if you were saying it out loud and then somebody else is saying it out loud, taking up space. And sometimes it's nonsense. And I'd be thinking, well, if I was saying anyway, yeah.
So, what advice would you offer people who are struggling to kind of overcome some obstacle that's getting in the way of them pursuing their dreams and their passions?
I think, I don't know, but I think somewhere it is related to some sort of fear, you know? And it's the, you know, I think at some point they said there was maybe, you know, four fears or six fears. I think, you know, fear of poverty, fear of rejection, you know, fear of loss. Like there's a fundamental fears. And if you kind of look and see, well, what fear is actually here? Like, what is this particular fear? And then try and get to the source of it because, you know, it isn't anywhere. You know, I've seen inside many, you know, physical bodies and heads, surgery, you know, and you won't find anything there. So it's somewhere locked in our language. It's locked in how we think about things. It's locked in how we speak about things. And I think if you can speak about things differently, that's why I say engage in dialogue and allow yourself to be encouraged by somebody else who's got a different perspective. So allow that thing to like not be, you know, they say between, you know, beware of the enemy between your two ears. Because this can be, and it's like at least say something out of your mouth, like say something that you want to do or you have a dream or something and you haven't pursued it. And then have that conversation and say, well, how come and why not? And just allow yourself to explore something and then see what opens up, just literally in that willingness to say, well, you know, I have this dream and I haven't kind of got around to it yet. And, you know, how come? Well, I'm not really sure. And then, well, maybe it's this. What are you be afraid of? Well, maybe rejection, maybe people being laughed at, you know, criticism, all the things that we would be afraid of. And then think, well, what if it was okay that you know, feel the fear and do it anyway? You know, Louise Hay, it's like,
Right.
so that's the.
You make it sound so simple, though. And I work with people almost every day that are very stuck in some fear. And most, I would say, cannot identify what fear that is. In the yoga philosophy, we would say, you know, there's this ultimate fear of death, but a lot of other fears of abandonment and rejection and, you know, whatever all the fears are, kind of stem from that fear of wanting to stay in this human body and wanting to live this life that we have. So I don't know. I'm really sometimes struggle with helping people to get unstuck and even figure out what that fear is. Do you have any special tricks? I know you're kind of like a coach for people. Anything that you could offer, things to help people identify their fear and then just lean into it?
I think people are not necessarily always aware of what they say. So when you're listening to people quite keenly, you can hear them. People actually will tell you if you let them speak long enough. So to me, it's like once you're listening, and then at some point you'll hear something, and then you'll say, "Oh, just say a little bit more about that, a little bit more about that." And then you can kind of start to, you know, tease out a little bit if people are willing to engage. So it's a willingness to engage, number one. And then, so when you're listening, you can generally hear what people say. It's like people will say it themselves. And that's what coaching is like. I just kind of, you find it, coach it out of people, really.
And do you find that they say it out loud and they still haven't heard it? Like they say it, the words are out, and then you paraphrase or reflect it back to them, and they're like, "What? What did you just say?" Like it came out of them, but they still don't see it. So interesting. So what message do you hope your readers take away from the book, The Courage to Shine?
Well, the subtitle is, you know, find your voice and discover the healing power of your words. So to me, it's all about words, the actual words, you know, the words that come out, the words that don't come out. And to just to find that voice, and like you said, be willing to say whatever it is you have to say. When I say the courage to shine, sometimes I say it's the courage to tell the truth, and tell the truth to yourself, and tell the truth to other people about, whatever it is you're like, whatever that thing is, just be willing to kind of express it and free up this like self-expression, like just free yourself up and just say whatever, because if your intention isn't to upset and your intention isn't to kind of harm or damage or whatever, if your intention is to, I don't know, contribute or explore or, really, I don't know what, just different. So in just in terms of that, I suppose, look, I'm in the healing profession. I've been like a medic like my whole life. And I just think the healing power of words, I think we underestimate the power of our own words to heal our own hurt, or any. So because, there's nobody digging a knife into me. Any hurt I have is something I'll remember. And then I'll remember the conversation. And then I can actually maybe tweak that a little bit and say, well, and just review. So yes, maybe just listen a little bit more to either what you say yourself and what other people say, and what are people trying to say?
Do you feel like words have a vibration and that it goes out into the world? Like I'm thinking of someone who might say, "Oh, I'm so stupid." Do you feel that that has a vibrational impact out there and also on ourselves if that comes out of our mouth?
Totally. And it's the thought. It was the thought before it came out.
Yeah.
Like what are thoughts? They're all kind of, what are they? But yeah, yes. And then it's like whether you keep, I often say, if I didn't tell people, oh, I'm shy. Like if I said I'm shy, they'll relate to me like I'm shy. You asked me, was I, an introvert? I said, no, I'm not an introvert. But, if I said I was an introvert, you would think, oh, Eileen's an introvert. She said so.
Right.
But like, I'm not an introvert. I can behave as an introvert on a regular basis. I can be very happy in my own company. But I think what we say, yeah, so it's the thought, I don't really want you to think I'm an introvert because I'm not an introvert, right? And so I think, yeah, that's the thoughts first and then the words and then how they can kind of reinforce because you can keep repeating them and repeating them and repeating them, and then you can actually live into them like they're true. And maybe they're not.
In yoga philosophy, we would say, even before the thought is what's in your heart. So, what is in your heart, what you're feeling, then becomes the thought, then becomes the words. And so, we can trace it all the way back deep into basically how you're feeling about yourself.
And that'll probably come back to literally where you're standing, what environment you're in, what are you picking up, what are you looking at, who's there, what's the energy in the space that you're in, when you walk into a room or you walk somewhere, it's like, yeah, it's who knows where it starts. I don't, I'm kind of fascinated really by this whole human beings. And yeah, because I think we're pretty much energetic creatures in the end of the day, and I don't think we're going to do well on Mars.
I don't either. I wish Elon Musk would stop. So, you said at the beginning that you have another book coming out. Can you tell us just a little bit about that one and when it will be out?
I'm hoping by early next year. It's pretty much in the final phases of its manuscript now. It's Embrace the Edge. Life is bigger when you say yes.
Wow. So, and any last words about what we could expect in that book? Life is bigger when we say yes.
There's lots of things about, oh, boundaries and say no and all that kind of stuff. And I think actually the most fun I've had was saying yes. So, and I mean, I would say yes to everything else except speaking for like most of my life. I parachute jump, I'd be jumping. I mean, I do everything. And the only thing I really said no to was like no to my mother and no, I'm not speaking for you. No. And then once I had that one, it's like, oh, should say yes to everything now.
Yeah.
Not quite, but
Yeah.
I draw a
The
line, I draw
things that we fear, we should lean into and maybe say yes to.
I think so. Yeah, the things that kind of excite you or inspire you, or you can see some little glimmer of, oh, wouldn't that be fun? Or that could be interesting. Or I wonder what that's like. And then be
Yeah.
willing to risk it, have that little kind of. We're here for a good time, I think, not a long time. Life is to be enjoyed, not endured.
Yeah. Oh, so true. So, Eileen, where can we find you? If people would like to read your books or get into coaching with you or invite you to be a speaker, how do we find you?
Well, the book is on Amazon, so amazon.com. You can find The Courage to Shine. My website, it's also available on the website, which is Eileen Forrestal. com. And I'm pretty much available on, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm
Same
like
name.
everywhere, same name. Moi.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
So
thank
yeah.
you for being with us today. It was really fun just to slow down and unpack because I think everyone has their thing, just like you had your thing with speaking. And I think all of us can reflect now after listening to what is that thing that I'm scared of, that I don't want to lean into, that I am allowing to control my decisions and limit my possibilities. So I thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, and I think for me, like speaking is self-expression, but for other people, something else is self-expression. And like you said before, when you're shining, your self-expression is out there. Whether you're an artist or a dancer, or you're out there with your colors and your, whatever it is that you're being kind of, you're just being kind of out there, being self-expressed. So, yes, like you say, for me, it was fairly obvious what that expression was, but for other people, it might not be so obvious. So just to look a little bit at that and see what is it that is stopping you from shining.
Thank you so much, Eileen. It was so lovely to meet you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Eileen, for being with us today. And your ability to face your fear and to do it anyway and to move through this so that you can speak and your voice can be heard and you can share with all of us is really inspirational to me. As we move into 2025, which is just around the corner, by the time you'll be listening to this, we'll be almost into the holiday season. And I wanted to tell you about a program that I have coming up all next year, and it has to do with emotional intelligence. I'm going to be running a program around yoga therapy, and emotional intelligence for the entire year of 2025. And each month we'll have a different part of emotional intelligence that we're going to examine. One of the months has to do with the upper back, throat, neck, shoulders, and ability to speak your truth. So that's an example of one of the months that we'll be offering. And every month of the whole year in 2025 is going to have something like that, where we examine your physical body, your mental body, your emotional body, and your spiritual body, and giving a lecture, some postures, some breath work, and a yoga nidra meditation for each and every class. So I hope you'll keep an eye out for that. You can find out more on www.theoptimalstate.com. And again, we'll start all of this in January of 2025. I hope you'll join us for these Monday night clinics on emotional intelligence and yoga.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. You can also see the video versions on YouTube. If you'd like to get early release, you can always support us as a Patreon member. If you'd like to find us on YouTube or Patreon, just type in the Yoga Therapy Hour and Optimal State, and you'll find us. All right. Thank you for your support. We appreciate you so much. A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.